Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another edition of the News in Reviews. Joining me, as always, is my most excellent panel, some of the greatest minds on the planet. From Youngstown, Ohio, author, activist, and teacher Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome to the program.
Simon, thank you for that rousing introduction. Looking forward to a great show after a long week at school and a longer weekend of being under the weather.
And how about them Browns?
I think it's coming down to the last second. I don't know. I went on to the show, but they were doing very well and had a great first half and a lousy second half. The opposite of last week. Maybe next week they'll learn to put four quarters together.
Right. I'll know if anything happens because I'll hear screaming from from the bedroom. You know, for the Saints to get beaten by the Browns.
I tell you, during the first half, I mean, it's just like I said, it's a team that hasn't played a full game. They haven't, like they got to say, the great team know how to play from the beginning to the end. All the other teams, you know, they just don't.
And from the city of Angels, we have Ace Attorney Peter Haven. Peter, hello. Oh. Okay, maybe we don't have Peter Haven. Maybe I got the phone number wrong. Okay. Also from Los Angeles, we have a well-known psychologist, Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, how has your week been?
It's been a wonderful week, busy, killing the world, and I've been cogitating, thinking, meditating on how to solve everything. Just make me the king of the world, and I think we'll all be all right.
Okay. There's no shortages of topics to talk about, but before we get started, I have to find out who this curious person from the 213 area code is. Caller, would you care to talk to us? Silence. Silence is golden. Okay.
Someone's messing with you, Simon.
Well, 213, that will be Los Angeles. I'm pretty certain we'll be able to figure out who it is. Anyway, back to the plot. I'd like to start with the NFL. And no, I'm not going to talk about how the season is only 1 week old and the San Diego Chargers and Cleveland Browns are already establishing themselves at the bottom of the league. I want to discuss... hold on.
I know what happened with my technical difficulties. Can you hear me now?
Oh, and now we have the ace attorney.
Yeah,
Peter
some ace
Haven.
Attorney. I can't even handle the phone. Forgive me, gentlemen. It's good to be back. I don't know why you couldn't hear me earlier. I was speaking, and for some reason I just wasn't getting my point across, as always.
Right. Okay, so pretty much we have a full house. So... I was going to start off with the NFL. I don't want to discuss league standings, but I do want to discuss Ray Rice. It seems that the tabloid site TMZ managed to obtain a video that the NFL could not. The two-game suspension of Ray Rice has leapfrogged into what essentially I view as a lifetime ban. Peter, does the punishment match the crime?
Well, it's very interesting. It depends on what the punishment is. I think it seems like he's going to have a lifetime ban, but I'm not convinced that it will be a lifetime ban. I think he's going to have to undergo a lot of public scrutiny and public shame, and I don't think he's going to play the rest of the year. And when he comes back, he's going to have to deal with these issues, and it's not like he's got an unlimited lifespan anyway in the NFL. So I think when the dust settles and when, you know, next season when he's considering coming back to the NFL, I think that the punishment will fit the crime. But it's still too early to say in that regard. It's unclear to me how long he's going to be sitting out.
Gary, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, it's, I think we all feel the same way that it's a pretty horrific thing. You know, it's the idea of, you know, a lot of people. Is everything okay? Could you hear me?
Hear you loud and clear.
You're kind of loud, like you're on a speakerphone or something.
Like, could you hear me now?
Yeah.
Not bad? Okay. It's kind of like, you know, we make people in the media, whether it's entertainment, which, of course, sports is, we make it into a Rorschach test. And, you know, we don't know who these people are. And, you know, we have, teams of people who make them into these kind of iconic people, whether it's Tiger Woods or whether it's Ray Rice or whether it's, you know, a whole bunch of other people, Adrian Peterson, and, you know, he's smiling into the camera and drinking his Gatorade. But you don't know who these people are. Now, as far as what Ray Rice did, I'm not so quick to want to destroy someone's life for that. I think it's absolutely horrid. But, you know, I'm in the business of change, and I'm in the business of people coming to terms with things and of people bettering themselves. And I think it's, you know, the overreaction of wanting to destroy this man, it just doesn't make any sense. It's horrible what he did. He should pay a price, which he is paying. He should be allowed back into the NFL. If he does, you know, he goes to a year of anger management classes. He does basically what Michael Vick did. He comes on the other side. He starts speaking to kids in high school about violence, about maybe how he was raised. And, you know, he comes clean. He doesn't say I'm sorry just to say I'm sorry. But he comes to a sense of sorry because he had a change of heart, because he figures things out. Doesn't do it to get what he wants to get, which is always part of the equation. But really, if he changes his heart and says, you know what, I lost my way. I was arrogant. I thought whatever I did was okay because I was Ray Rice, but it was horrible what I did, and shame on me. I'm mortified, and I hope that I could change, you know, who I am and what I did. And if he does that, then that's something that's good.
And Sam, I'd like to get your opening.
Well, first of all, Sam, I want you to eat some words. The Browns just won on the last second field goal and beat the Aints.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
Oh,
26-24.
Man.
My son just texted me from Peter and Gary's neck of the woods, and he's on. He's one at the Browns backing club of Riverside or Bates. So he just texted me. So I'm very excited. We're 1-1. Hey, now we've got a better chance of doing something. I think this Ray Rice. Remember, my other son does social media for Sports Illustrated. So he called me yesterday and was telling me. With all the Ray Rice stuff, and then the Adrian Peterson thing, and the Roger Goodall and all that, they've had more action on their their Twitter accounts, Facebook accounts, and everything else than they've ever had in the history since, well, in the year and a half he's been there. All over just this Ray Rice incident. She said it's like melting their website and everything, with the constant comments and all that. So it's a very hot topic for many, many reasons. I am, from what he told me, and I'm going to go, he's got more information than I do, is that I don't think Ray Rice is going to see any time, because I think he was up front. It appears he told Goodall with his wife that he did punch his wife, and that they were up front about the whole thing way back in April. And it's Goodall, is that I pronounce his name, and the other greedy SOBs at the NFL are the ones who are going to have to pay the price for this. So I think Ray Rice, and I agree with Gary that, you know, there's some counseling and this and that. His wife is standing by his side, et cetera, et cetera. That I think he'll be back probably playing, if not this year, definitely next year for somebody. Because it appears he, you know, manned up, as they say, told the truth, didn't cover up anything. He thought, and it was the NFL execs who did, and the commissioner who did, and they're the ones who are going to have to, if he's smart, Roger Goodall will fall on his $44 million sword and end up getting a job, I'm sure, with somebody. But I think it goes, I think the league situation was, as a Cleveland Browns fan, what I thought was just incredibly, you know, just stupid on the NFL is we have a great wide receiver. His name is Josh Gordon. He likes to smoke marijuana. He got caught. They suspended him for the whole season. At the same time, when Rice got 2 days, 2-game suspension for punching his wife, he admitted to that before the video broke. A couple other NFL ball players have beaten the crap out of their girlfriends, wives, or whatnot. They've only been suspended for a couple days. So it appears if you're an NFL football player, you can punch Mary Jane, but you can't toke Mary Jane.
Right. And
that's my take on it.
And Peter, this leads into my next question. I had an interesting conversation with some people in the world of the bail bonds industry, and apparently Ray Rice entered a pretrial diversion program shortly after the incident. So what it boils down to is, regardless of how bad the elevator video is, it's my understanding that if he stays on the program, all charges will be dropped. Does this sound reasonable to you?
Well, the criminal justice system has a massive amount on its plate that it needs to process. And some of the things that Gary talked about earlier are very true. They have to deal with an extraordinary amount of things, and they have to also try to rehabilitate people and not just punish people. And, you know, my understanding is that he will be deemed a first offender, but if he does the anger management and the pretrial diversion management classes and treatment that he's supposed to get, then he won't have to have any jail time. The charge will be dismissed, but he'll be a noted first offender. And this is the kinds of things you always hear about when you hear about criminal charges. Is this a first offense, or is this guy a repeat offender? And the system is betting on the idea that this guy, after the first offense, will basically turn over a new leaf and he won't be a problem again. And the system would rather see that kind of outcome than it would incarcerating someone if it doesn't have to. And the other thing that has to be considered here is that, you know, there are two separate processes at work. There's the criminal justice process, and it has already determined what type of quote-unquote punishment it's going to give to him. And there's the NFL process, which is completely different and in many respects seems to be governed by public perception. from the criminal justice perspective, I can tell you that they would have challenges prosecuting him given the testimony of the wife. And no matter how much video footage you have, if you're a prosecutor and you believe that the wife is going to take the stand in defense of the husband and explain 1,000 reasons why this incident occurred, and also describe that it's partially your fault and there are things that took place off screen or off camera, if you will, you know, prosecutors have to make choices about the kinds of cases they take to prosecution, and this one has this type of resolution written all over it. First time offender, wife not wanting to press charges, and a difficult case to try to take to trial regardless of the video footage.
Okay, but the press is making big on this story. From a legal standpoint, there's nothing anyone can do because he has entered a pretrial diversion program.
From the criminal justice perspective, the system has spoken, and he will go into that pretrial diversion program. So I forget, this occurred in New Jersey. So the state of New Jersey has elected to mete out that type of punishment, and if he completes that program successfully and he doesn't have any further offenses, then there will be nothing further done to him legally. Now, under normal circumstances, the wife could pursue a civil lawsuit against him, but it seems very apparent that she's not going to do that. And as far as the NFL is concerned, that's just a whole another ballgame. They have to decide what punishment they're going to give him, and I think they're still wrestling with that. I think they don't know what kind of punishment to give him.
Okay. Sam, I'm going to ask you a strange question. Let's assume for one moment that Ray Rice was a musician rather than an NFL or NHL, sorry, NFL player. If a musician, you know, smacks his wife around, should he be banned from playing music?
No, it's an interesting point, question you raise, which I think brings to a bigger picture of who's got the best PR of the entertainment industry, sports, movies, music, authors, whatever. Who's got the best public relations machine out there? And I don't think anybody can rival the NFL because of the amounts of money that it generates. Not that the others don't. But it appears, let's face it, Ray Lewis killed somebody, and he's got a couple Super Bowl rings. He's now a broadcaster on Monday Night Football. Life goes on. I mean, the NFL treats its violence differently because it's a violent sport, and the perception as the word that came up, they can get away with a little bit more than a musician can. A musician won't be banned for life for striking their wife. Might lose some. Might be some private boycotts of it or this or that, but there's no musicians, what's the word I'm looking for? There's no commissioner for musicians. There's no, it's such a different, it's apples and oranges, and you can't compare them, because they're more individual, individual, and Peter could probably know more about that with the legal aspects of it. I think a musician's probably more of an independent contractor, just like I am as an author. I mean, if I punch somebody out, my publisher might, might drop me, but another publisher is going to pick me up. I'm not going to be banned from writing. And I don't think Ray Rice has been banned. He's been banned from playing for the Baltimore Ravens for the rest of this year and could be reinstated. Again, I got to go by with what, from what all understanding is, based upon the laws of New Jersey, as Peter so pointed out, and he's going through the system. On top of that, it appears he told the truth. He was up front. Him and his wife went up there, and that's why the suspension. And little did anybody know at the time about this video. I don't. Why Goodall and all these other. Why they formed the Circular Firing Squad, and they had the tape that's come out. and never thought it was going to come up in today's world. I mean, maybe he doesn't deserve to be the NFL commissioner. That's pretty stupid, you know.
And Gary, I have to pose the same or similar question to you. You know, if a musician punched his wife out, or an author, would they be banned from playing music or, you know, writing books?
Oh, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of bad people out there, Simon. I mean, we know that. There's just a lot of bad people out there. And it's when you see it, you don't want to see it. I mean, you know, if Ray Rice is never on television, he's playing today. And I think, you know, it's just, there's a lot of things when things happen and people, you know, we get outraged. You know, we are, I've said this before, I know I sound like a broken record, we are a bloodthirsty country. We love our guns, we love our violent movie, and from a psychological perspective, being outraged on this gives us some cover. You know, we see violence in movies against women all the time, and we're like salivating and we're watching it. And it's kind of hypocritical. It's not that I don't see that this is a horrible thing. And, you know, fine, I have no sympathy for Ray Rice. I have no sympathy for Ray Lewis. I have no sympathy for Kobe Bryant. Could you imagine if we had a film of Kobe Bryant in the hotel room in Colorado? He would never play in the NBA again. Possibly. So, I mean, could you imagine? So what it's going to say is we get outraged, we get justifiably outraged. We're going to go into war. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that because you see the beheadings. It outrages us, it scares us, and makes us. So it's a real interesting psychological dynamic of it being in your face and how it affects us on a very visceral level. But like I said, in a lot of ways it gives us cover for our own bloodthirstiness, and the more outraged we are, we could say, I'm outraged at Ray Rice, let's excommunicate him from the NFL, and let me go watch my movie where some guy's beating up another woman.
Okay, but there's a subtle difference between, you know, a musician or an author, you know, smacking his wife around. Sure, as Sam pointed out, you know, the publisher might take umbrage, but, you know, there's lots of other publishing houses out there. But, you know, to be essentially banned, you know, by the NFL, it is somewhat different, you know.
Right, I totally agree. I totally agree with you, Simon.
You know, there's similar things going on here in that these bands that we're speaking of, they're really just a function of what the audience, of what the providers of these, you know, the providers of these services, these forms of entertainment, of what they believe the public will tolerate. And the only reason that Ray Rice is suspended right now, the only reason is because the NFL believes that the public won't tolerate this type of video. There's really nothing.
Peter, that's
that
a
the
great
video.
Point.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
the video didn't show anything. The video didn't show anything that a reasonable person would have already concluded had happened in that elevator. And if these accounts of Ray Rice's discussions with Roger Goodell are true, then he told Roger what happened in the elevator. And, you know, to come slightly to the defense of Roger Goodell, all I can say is if you're in one of these meetings and you're meeting the player face-to-face and his spouse is right there and she's pleading with you and telling you and looking at you imploringly and trying to explain to you that she feels there's some explanation for what this happened, it makes it harder to punish the person. It just does.
And Peter, you bring up a great point. I think that's what happened. But Goodall also, they wanted to cut. They did not expect that tape to go public, and now that it
has... No, they didn't expect the video to be seen, but the only reason he's being suspended right now is not because, in my opinion, they learned anything new. It's, in my opinion, because that now that curtain has been drawn back and now people are seeing it, and they're reacting. They're reacting to the reaction. And so, you know, to go to your point, if some music superstar did something like this, it all depends on his audience. You know, if Ted Nugent did something like this, I'm not sure that would affect his audience. If someone else did something like this, I think he could seriously destroy his market and his marketability. And it's really a consumer purchasing decision that's being made right now. The system looked at this and meted out its punishment. Goodell met with these people and determined on an appropriate course of action. But now people are looking behind the curtain and they're seeing what really went on, and now everybody's reacting to the public perception. And that's really what's going on here, in my opinion.
But, you know, Peter, I have to tell you, did any of you three see how he dragged his wife out of the elevator? He didn't even pick her up. After he knocked her out, he didn't pick her up in his arms, you know, and carry her into the room. He just dragged her out like a corpse. That to me was even worse. That was just as bad as whacking her, you know.
People are more upset about the way he behaved after that. Look, all you can see from that video is these are two people. The impression I got is they had both been drinking. That's the impression I have. I don't know if that's true. It's late at night in an Atlantic City casino. They're fighting. I don't know what they're fighting about. And it's an ugly fight. It's just an ugly, ugly a fight between you know, people in a relationship, and it's just an ugly, ugly thing. And they're both clearly really upset about something, and he's obviously furious about something. I don't know what it is. I have no idea. And at that moment, they have nothing but contempt and disgust for each other. And then for some reason, they wake up the next morning, and that's not the case anymore. And I don't know what to say about that. I honestly don't know what to say about that. But if you're trying to unravel all of this from the perspective of someone outside of it trying to make sense of it, it's very possible that the whole thing just gets very confusing.
And Gary, you know, this definitely is your kind of environment. I'm not saying you... hang out in elevators, but there's something wrong with today's relationships. There should never ever be a reason to cold cock your wife or girlfriend.
No, of course not, Simon. There's no reason. People will give reasons, but there's no reason. But the most dangerous call a police officer could be called on is domestic violence. And the reason is there's so many primitive things getting activated in relationships. It's about, you know, your mom, dad. It's about you're now a husband, or if in this case, if you're married, a husband, wife. It triggers so many things, unconscious things, pre-conscious things. And it's very intense, because a lot of times people who are psychologically damaged, they feel like if their partner leaves them, it feels like an existential threat. You know, it's very regressive. It's kind of like sometimes if you feel like your wife's going to leave you, a girlfriend or a husband or a boyfriend, like it's almost like, imagine like you're a three-year-old kid and your parent drives to the middle of the desert on a moonless night and lets you out of the car and drives away. I mean, it feels that intense. They feel like they have no choice, and my life will be destroyed, and you can't leave me, or you're smiling at someone else, and I'm so angry with you, and it brings up a lot of primitive psychological stuff. And so it's very intense. There's, of course, Simon, there's no reason. What we want to do, of course, is we want to understand it. We want to understand it, and we want to get the person who's doing this in this position, we want to get them to find their adult self and say, wait a minute, you look, if I'm a kid and my parents are tough to me, I'm screwed. I'm stuck. I can't get on my big wheel and, you know, go to the Four Seasons and get a room. But as an adult, with a woman in an abusive relationship, Mrs. Rice has the resources and the ability to get in her car and to go to the Four Seasons and get a room. But people forget that. And so it triggers some really, really primitive. When I say primitive, I'm talking about early childhood wounds, that it really affects people from an existential position. They feel it's a position of death, which is why people go nuts and why the intensity of the altercations can be really, you know, life and death, guns, shootings, and so forth. It can get pretty insane.
And just to add a thought onto that, you know, lately this past week or two, I've heard a lot of statements like the kind that Simon you just said, and Gary, everybody agrees. It's never okay to cold cock your wife or your girlfriend. But I get a little concerned when I hear people making those gender lines, because quite frankly, it's never okay to cold cock anyone. And When you say things like it's never okay to hit a woman, if you don't clarify that what you're really saying is it's never okay to hit anyone, then you're creating a gender line. And what you're implicitly suggesting is that there may be an appropriate circumstance when it's okay to cold cock a guy. And that's just part of the male tribal culture. And if you perpetuate that kind of mentality, then you're telling men it's okay to punch each other. And sooner or later, if guys think it's okay to punch each other, sooner or later they're going to punch a girl too. And it's really problematic when I hear these statements about never hitting a woman, because it's actually a very slippery slope. You shouldn't really be hitting anyone. But the fact of the matter is, in the real world, there are sometimes circumstances where you are excused in punching someone. And it's just reality. It's just reality. And I'm not saying this is it by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just difficult when you start drawing these gender lines. The other thing I wanted to say is, from the perspective of the system looking at these kinds of domestic abuse cases, it really does matter how the victim behaves, because there are so many complicated issues associated with it. And a year or two ago, we had a similar incident between Chad Ochocinco and his then-wife. I think her name is Evelyn Loaiza. And they got into a similarly ugly fight, and the allegation was that he headbutted her. And this is what she did after the incident occurred. She got away from him. She went across the street. She went to a neighbor's house. She told them she had been injured. She told them to call the police. She immediately spoke with the police. She immediately pressed charges. And she filed for divorce the next day. The system does a much better job of prosecuting a guy in that situation than it does in a situation where the victim turns around and marries him the next day. And also says, it's all my fault, don't punish him, and blah, blah, blah. I don't know why people are saying these different things, but from the ability of the justice system to do justice, it's harder in a situation where the victim is not acting or prosecuting the wrongdoer. And you know, it seems to me many people talk about these theories about, you know, why, for instance, a victim, and I'm not talking about gender, any victim, would come out in defense of the wrongdoer. And there's a lot of theory about how they're psychologically conditioned to behave this way and whatnot. And I'm not so sure that it's just limited to gender. I think sometimes men can get caught in relationships with women who are emotionally abusive. And I'm not saying
Could I speak to that, Peter, you're saying? The thing I'm saying is that the guy who beats his wife, or let's just say whoever beats whoever, they're really a great guy 29 days out of a month. And they're not like a horrible, very few people are sociopaths. And they're just, you know, are sadistic monsters. But most of the people are good, and they've been beat themselves, and they cry on their wife's bosom and say, I'm so sorry. And, you know, they're the Ralph Cramdons. I just love you so much, honey. And they're good people. And it doesn't excuse it, of course. But then when they hit someone, they always give a reason. Well, you burnt my steak. And so if the woman stays with him, right, and then like a month later, she burns her steak again, and then he hits her again, and this erodes her self-esteem, and all of a sudden, but she loves her husband, and all of a sudden she says to herself, man, I shouldn't have burned his steak. And all of a sudden you're through the looking glass, because now she's taking ownership of it because she hasn't left. And she says, well, if I didn't smile at the waiter, if I didn't do this, if I didn't do that, he wouldn't have hit me. And so the woman, I'm just being, you know, the knuckle driver position, which you very insightfully talked about, is at some point you take ownership of it. And so when people want to make Ray Rice a monster, he may well be, but he also may have been beaten himself, and he may suffer child abuse, and he may have this rage issue, and he may be a very gentle, loving man who lost his crap and should be punished. But doesn't mean that you destroy this person, and so it's a very complicated dynamic.
I just want to kind of embellish for you guys from a different point of view. I'm one, growing up in Northeast Ohio and having sons here, high school football is our dominant sport here. If your son, and one of mine was an awesome football player, they won state championship, they hung around with kids, I call this the pampered jock line, okay? How do I know Ray Rice or others, you know, as they become such great athletes, they're favored from the time they're very little all the way through junior high, high school, college, and in the pros. Everyone wants to be around them. They get away with stuff. You know what I mean? Ray Rice might have punched out other women. Maybe he was a victim of abuse too, Gary. I agree with you on that. But maybe he had anger issues or whatnot and punched women more in high school, and the high school coach covered it up because they needed him to play in the football game. There was ever any consequences because he was a great jock as he worked up to the system, as other jocks are. I've seen it with my own kids. I've seen it with other kids, and I'm sure you guys have seen it too. If you participated in sports in America or had children or nephews, nieces, sons, daughters, whatever, the better athletes get preferential treatment, and sometimes they think they can get away with it. And I'm not saying that's what happened here at all, but we have created that sort of identity, you know, for the better. If you're a great athlete and you're an asset to your team, chances are that everyone looks the other way when you do something wrong, and it's covered up. And I think part of that came, and that's part of the problem in the NFL, as in baseball, basketball, because there's so many dollars at risk here. And that's just a thought I had.
Okay. Gary, you mentioned child abuse, which definitely brings me onto the next story. Adrian Peterson. He has been charged with child abuse for using a switch. Apparently it was a willow branch.
Ooh.
On a 4-year-old child. Now, to me, that's just unconscionable. And his excuse, apparently, is that, well, that's what my parents did to me, so I do it to my children. Hey, where's the rationale in this?
Well, but that's kind of the way it is. And in some cultures, Simon, especially if you look in kind of African-American, Southern culture, I don't know if he was born there, my guess is he was, that's just what's done. And, you know, when you grow up in that kind of environment, it doesn't seem abusive. Of course, I was saying this the other day, in 2014, when you have Oprah and everyone else, I mean, you've got to come out of that. And, again, if it was filmed, he would be out of the league forever. If you saw him beat his boy, actually do it to him, beat him, he would be done. But, you know, it's horrible. And, again, it's the same kind of thing that we've been talking about. I think what, you know, I've talked to some people, I had a couple of patients during the Michael Vick situation, and they were African-American, and they were from the South. He goes, that's just what people do. That's what you grow up in. That's what happens in our culture. It is what people do, and it does not feel abusive at all. It's just what we do. It doesn't make it right, but it's an interesting dynamic. So, of course, it's horrible, and of course, he has to be educated and rehabilitated. Again, I don't want to kick him out of the league, but, boy, I don't want him to ever hit his boy again. I mean, it's just horrible. A little four-year-old kid. I have a four-year-old kid around my house today. She's the sweetest thing in the world. And the idea to think that I would beat her with a switch is nauseating.
He caned his own kid. That's the way I look.
Despicable.
He caned his own kid. I mean, I can understand a spank. I think we've all been spanked and spanked, you know. I mean, maybe not, maybe have. But, I mean, he caned him to the point that they had to rush him to the hospital. I think that's how he got caught. Am I right? Guys.
I gotta tell you, I find these types of actions more reprehensible than, you know, for me personally, they're more reprehensible than the Ray Rice incident. There's just something about children and animals that really just, it's just a more heinous crime to me. These two people, Ray Rice and his wife, they're adults. They have resources. It's awful that they're in this sort of love-hate relationship or whatever the heck it is. But she's an adult, okay? She can make adult decisions. She has resources. This is just a little kid. And it reminds me a lot of the dog abuse stuff with Michael Vick, because it really seems like there's an expression of violence and rage that's being taken out on someone who has no responsibility for it being there and can't really defend themselves or protect themselves, and they're completely at the mercy of this adult provider. It reminds me a lot of fraternity hazing, you know. Why do fraternities continue to haze new members? Well, it was done to them, and by gosh, they're going to do it to someone else. And the whole thing just really disgusts me.
Gentlemen, I'd like to ask, I'm not really familiar with the details other than he beat his son with a stick. But from what I understand, this took place in the springtime of this year. Is
correct.
That correct? The springtime?
It was relative. Yeah.
It didn't happen like on Thursday night. This took place like 5 months ago, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay. What I'm very interesting is that how come, you know, I know there was a grand jury indictment, all this stuff. How come he never went, or anybody else? This is the pampered jock syndrome I'm talking about. This happened. He didn't know he was going to get in trouble, yet he was playing in the preseason. No one knew about it. The Vikings didn't know about it. No one knew about it. I mean, and they just don't fess up because they're used to getting away with things. And the only reason, you know, he got in trouble, I'm assuming, without reading the stuff, and I know, is that they probably had to take the kid to the hospital, and the hospital, of course, reported what happened, and then the investigation takes place and whatnot. And I'm wondering, did the Vikings ownership, Viking management, the NFL get notified about this and just decide to sit on it and wait? Or just shocking breaking news to everybody? I tend to think the former, not the latter.
Yeah, I think it's the former. I think
yeah.
These organizations
and I bet, who knows, you know, I mean, no, it's funny, like last year, Peter, we talked about, you know, the hazing, you brought up hazing, of the Jonathan Martin, is that his first name?
Yeah.
You had that, you know, this culture that's all coming out of the NFL, I mean, it's like imploding of, you know, all this, what's happening, you know, and, you know, and I think, Gary, you bring up a great point, not about just these children were brought up. You know, I don't know, is this a part of the concussions, things of this nature, that, you know, they don't react, they can't take a deep breath, count to 10 before they do something? You know, I don't know. I mean, but, you know, I don't want them to use the concussion defense like the Twinkie defense, but it's such a violent sport, and it's such a violent culture, as Gary has pointed out. I guess we shouldn't be shocked. I'm not shocked at the violent behavior by the NFL players. I'm shocked that I believe there's cover-ups going on, or look the other way going on by those in power, because there's so many dollars at stake. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
That's actually a very good point. Gary, do you feel that that's what's happening. It's just cover up after cover up.
It's cover up after cover up, and the other thing is that's really discouraging is I would love to have this outrage for the Wall Street bankers that bankrupted hundreds of thousands of people and ruined. You know, it's like, again, it's like I would rather get punched in the face than lose $500,000. I mean, I've been have my retirement wiped out. And it's like this is where I think the African Americans and the minorities, they get so outraged because at the end of the day, it's just so unjust. We get so upset, we're so indignant and all these things, and all of these bankers that just robbed us. Yes, the black man has a gun, they have a computer. Whatever, but they'll take billions and hundreds of billions of dollars, and all of them are living, you know, on their yachts in the Caribbean, while the people who were subjugated to them are working two jobs, have no retirement, will be working till they're 75 and dead, and it's disgusting to me. And so the whole thing is just so backwards. I mean, I know I'm on a tangent. I know I get on tangents sometimes, but it's just so frustrating to me. And I think when the black rage comes up or the minority rage comes up, I think this is what they're talking about. Everyone wants this person to get fired and destroyed. And so-and-so from Goldman Sachs is like, you know, a golden parachute with $45 million in his bank account. It's the most disgusting thing in the world. I mean, you hear some outrage. Oh, no one's gone to prison. No one's gone to prison, but Jesus Christ, you should have had 1,500, 3,000 people doing perp walks down Wall Street in Manhattan, rotting in jail for 25 years. None, zero. And Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice, we want to put in prison. It's just outrageous.
I have a question for you guys.
Yes.
If instead of being Ray Rice or Adrian Peterson, and it was a practice squad member of the Ravens and a practice squad member of the Vikings, would we even be talking about this issue?
No.
Right, they're two superstars. Yeah. That's the other reason, right?
Yeah, he would just be cut, and that's the beginning and end of it. Who cares?
We wouldn't even know about it because they were nobodies.
That's right.
And Gary, by the way, I agree with you 1,000%. You know, Bernie Madoff isn't good enough for me. I want them all.
Yeah.
You know, they do it with Bernie Madoff, but we want them all. I agree with you.
I agree with Gary, too. It's awful. And to answer your question, Sam, we wouldn't be talking about it because TMZ wouldn't be looking for the videotape if it was some no-namer.
Correct. Okay, so we're all on the same page on this one.
Yeah. Sad but true.
Oh, by the way, at least let's give Ray Rice some credit here. He was doing his part to try to save his wife, the casinos in New Jersey.
Right. Didn't they close three of them?
They all closed. The
last
one closed. The last one closed this weekend. I think it's the Four Seasons, too. That was the last one. They're all emptied. Isn't that amazing? I mean,
well,
I didn't think about that. That's a whole separate issue. Atlantic City's casinos are all shut. Amazing.
Yep. All of them?
All of them.
Wow.
Used to be God rest the casinos. It's not like we don't really need them in the world.
Well, you know, not. I mean, you know, well, you know, I think the, you know, like the Fight Venture, the Miss America Pageant, those events might be going on. The hotels are still open, but the casinos themselves are all closed. So I do believe that you could still go book a hotel at the Trump Casino. You just can't go gambling. But it looks like it appears nobody was. But, you know, if remember how that was triumphed and trumpeted and it was the savior of all for everything, you know, I think that the casino's coming. You know, if I was an Indian casino or I was even Vegas and all these other places because gambling casinos have opened up everywhere, they're all probably, I think it's going to be a domino effect. It's not going to happen overnight, but the history will look back and say that was the beginning of the end when the Atlantic City started to close up.
Well, I think everybody's just going to Vegas.
You think so? I think we around us, you know, I have Pittsburgh, I have Cleveland. They just opened one up Wednesday. We have a Racino opening up. That's my favorite. Right down the street, 5 miles from us. You know, I mean, all this, it's just, they're everywhere. I mean, they cannibalize each other. I think that's, and it's going to be last casino standing. And maybe it is Vegas. Maybe you're right. It still has that aura. But, you know, how do you convince people to go there when, and Pittsburgh has a beautiful casino right near the, where you can go watch, you can get a package of the Steelers, the Pirates, the Penguins game, going all around there. You know, granted, we don't have the weather that Vegas has, but, I mean, I just think it's just a matter of cannibalizing. You know, pretty soon there won't be that many left. They're just going to cannibalize each other. There's only so many dollars. Plus, you can gamble online. You can gamble here. You can gamble there. So, just a,
okay. Anyone else want to chime in?
Well, for whatever it's worth, this Ray Rice incident, if I recall correctly, occurred on or around Valentine's Day. And there was another male-female domestic violence issue that arose on Valentine's Day. It may have been a year ago on Valentine's Day, but it is coming to a denouement in South Africa right now. And at the same time that Ray Rice was being vilified for punching his girlfriend, the Blade Runner was being found not guilty of essentially first-degree murder in Johannesburg, and it's my understanding he still faces criminal charges on something else, but, you know, it just seemed to me that that was a significant development that was occurring at the same time all of this was going on, and I hardly noticed any coverage of it.
Right. You're quite correct. Oscar Pistorius, I believe is his name.
Yeah.
He has been found guilty of involuntary manslaughter or... it wasn't that. It was something more serious. But,
culpable.
It was just an amazing result.
Homicide.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it basically
what?
Means he was really, really, really negligent is what the judge is saying.
Right.
All right. But guess what? He's back out on bail. The
Did he make bail?
Yes.
Wow.
can you believe that?
There's something really wrong with that result. Just fundamentally wrong. I don't know what's going on there, but that's just a fundamentally crazy result. Now, he still faces a significant potential sentence, but to let him out on bail just seems crazy to me.
Oh, maybe he wants to go running. Maybe he'll become a runner.
He already is a runner.
Right.
You know, I don't be running for his prison team. I think he's facing up to like 15 years. But who knows with South African justice? I mean, I was, I'm not familiar with that. Maybe Peter, you could attest. He went in front of a judge. There was no jury involved, right?
He was in front of a judge, and you know, I do hold out one hope in one thing, and this is partly reflected in the Ray Rice thing as well. When people feel like you get away with something and you escape punishment and you should have been punished, in many respects, you can get punished differently by society after the fact. And I think that's partly what's going on with Ray Rice. People were angered that he wasn't punished enough. There was a perception that he got away with something, and the video just confirmed that, and that unleashed this powder keg. I saw the same thing with O.J. Simpson, and if this guy in South Africa just walks with doing little or no jail time, I think that'll come back to haunt him in other ways. But, you know, we'll have to see how that unfolds.
Excellent observation, Peter.
Okay. Let's move on. Foreign Affairs, ISIS. They managed to behead another Westerner. This time it was a British aid worker, David Haynes. I believe that the video, which I have opted not to watch, shows the knife breaking in the process, but it's the James Foley story that gets my goat. Sam, you mentioned this to me in email, so I'll let you start.
Yes, Wednesday, I'm a big Anderson Cooper fan, and I think his show's got one of the more objective shows, talk shows on the cable television, and he promoted he was going to talk to the parents, and specifically Mr. Jim Foley's mom. And to get on, it was, and she was very composed, and I was impressed by that, but also a little kind of weirded out by that. My wife and I were like, I don't think I could go on television, international television, and talk, but maybe they knew this was coming, they had a sense it was coming, so I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. But she was very composed and announcing what they went through, her and her husband and her family. And the thing that shocked me is she mentioned that they felt like the system made them feel like they were an annoyance by asking for assistance, help, questions, comments. They flew over to Europe to meet with freed other hostages who the French government had paid for. They were trying to find out how to raise ransom money, and they were in the process of trying to raise ransom money or identify donors to bail to get ransom money for their son, when they were told by the bureaucracy. Now, that was the key word she used here, the bureaucracy. She did say the FBI, too, but that was the height of what she noted, that they would be indicted if they continued to try to find ransom money to give to their captors to get their son free. And I was appalled by that. They started to feel like they were the bad guys. That their government wasn't standing behind them or anybody else. They weren't doing anything that they could. And, in fact, they were. The Obama administration tried to do a rescue. I think it was they went to a place. They thought they were there, and they weren't there. They'd been moved. But all that sort of stuff aside, I mean, if my son's in the military, he's been over there, if he got kidnapped, and I would think that I would be, you know, why can't you try to? What is so wrong about trying to want to free your son?
Sam, I have a question for you. Sam, I have a question. If my child was kidnapped by ISIS, right? Mm-hmm. And I said I'm going to send over 20 surface-to-air missiles. If you would give my kid back, should I be allowed to do that?
Well, how would you do that?
Let's just say I can do it. I'm going to send money to an arms dealer somewhere in Morocco, and the Moroccan arms dealer is going to send ISIS 20 surface-to-air missiles with the money that I give him, and they're going to send my kid back to me. Now, should I be allowed to do that? Because you know that whatever money you give to ISIS is just going to be used.
Well, we give money anyway. Yeah, yeah. I think you should. You know what, Gary? Yeah, you should be able to. It's your kid.
No, because I said my boy went there on his own. It was his thing. We should not give the enemy missiles to kill hundreds and thousands of more people.
We are giving them. They already are taking our treasure. Those weapons they're killing us with.
Well, we shouldn't add to it.
But
we shouldn't add to it. It doesn't make any sense to add to it so we can save one person.
ISIS is capturing our old weapons there. Our old.
Sam, I understand that, but the point is you want to give them more and more resources to save one person that could literally kill tens of thousands.
So what's going to happen now? Let's look at it from this point of view. This beheading of this guy has outraged this country so much, we're going to be going back into war. And if you don't think we're going to have boots on the ground, so we could have paid money to get
him out.
That's
a different conversation, Sam. You're changing the conversation.
No, it isn't, Gary.
I'm talking about Foley. I'm talking about Foley and ransom.
Foley and ransom.
And I'm saying I don't think that we should be allowed to give money to ISIS.
The
government has a right. I should be allowed, and the government's allowed to push back, and I think that's appropriate.
And the government should be allowed to
daughter
too. We should do everything in our power to try to not get involved in wars.
That's a different conversation. It's a different conversation than money for the boy.
Go do what you have to do to get your kid out if you feel you're being ignored. If you feel your government thinks you're a nuisance, that's what they said, a nuisance.
You weren't being ignored. Obama sent special forces that failed, but he tried. He wasn't being ignored.
So we tried. Okay, we tried. So the, but you know, hey, we tried. We did the best we could.
All right, listen,
Charlie,
I've said my piece.
Okay.
I'm not disagreeing with you. Go get your missiles and get your kid out. I agree with you.
Yeah,
your kid.
Gary. Take a step back and think in terms of Gary, the father. You mentioned earlier that you had a 4-year-old child. If your child went missing, and someone phoned you or sent an anonymous letter saying you can get him back for $10,000.
Sure.
What would you do?
Oh, I would sell a kidney if I had to. And I don't. I'm not besmirching. I'm not saying that the Foley family shouldn't have done exactly what they did and tried to do whatever they could to save their boy, as I think anyone would. What I'm saying from a position of not being that person, which you can't sit there and go into the microscopic position and say that has to be the rule for everything. I'm saying from a geopolitical decision, you can't just simply, because first of all, when France gives $5 million for every person, all they're doing is capturing French journalists. And so it actually exacerbates the problem. If you look at the long term and not just what's right in front of you, which I can't do if it was my child, it's impossible. I just wouldn't be able to do
it.
Wait,
they're not just capturing French; they're capturing Americans and British, and they're beheading them because we're not paying
the money. I understand, but you know what? You know what? Listen.
And
we,
they don't need the ransom money.
You know what?
They
aren't so awful. If there was a film of how many hundreds of thousands of Iraqis being blown to smithereens because of George Bush's wet dream, they kill 3 journalists, and that's horrible. But we and Britain and the blood that we have on our hands is overwhelming.
I agree.
And again, it's just because it's on television that we are outraged. It is Ray Rice on steroids. If we had all these families, all these little 5-year-old kids that lost their limbs because George Bush's wet dream of shock and awe, it's outrageous what's going on, and the American myopia position of we as a country, we as a moral position, we are outraged, really. Where was the outrage when we were blowing up Iraqi neighborhoods all over the place and displacing hundreds of thousands? All these blind Iraqis are right now on crutches and on prosthetics because why? Because why? Because Saddam Hussein blew up the Twin Towers?
And we're going right down that slippery slope again. Because I'm not as outraged by Foley being killed.
I'm not that outraged by Foley being killed. He made the determination that he was going to go into the belly of the beast, and if we're going to sit there
now you're saying we shouldn't have journalists going over to cover.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you don't send 20 surface-to-air missiles to get him back.
That's outrageous.
I'm saying we shouldn't have journalists go over there. I'm saying it.
I think it's crazy to send people
into that place now. It's just crazy.
It's like as stupid as a plane flying over to Ukraine, right? During that civil war that's going on there. That was dumb too.
I don't think that's really similar.
If there's war zones going on with today's weaponry, Malaysian, all the other airlines were not flying in that area. So I'm not saying maybe.
Let me say this, Sam. Having had one plane shot down in that airspace, I think we ought to not send further planes over that airspace. And having had journalists killed and beheaded, I think we ought to not send journalists over there.
Okay, and I have no problem with that. So you think that the journalists... So then if a journalist goes out there on their own, then as Gary says, then they're on their own. If you say you can't go there, we're not going to send you over there because we're afraid you're going to get captured, beheaded. It's going to be a whole domino effect of negativity. You can't go there. And you sneak in and get there. then that is a different scenario. And I agree with you, Peter, and then I agree with you there, Gary. But there is no, because for years, journalists especially were allowed to, they covered wars. I can't remember on other sides, maybe you, and I know my history pretty well, of the other sides capturing our journalists and using them for ransom until recently. This, you know, and the ISIS is number one. You know, it was always soldiers, might have been citizens in the embassy, like the Iran hostage thing, but never journalists, because they always wanted to have the journalism on their side. You know, they always wanted to try, you know, ISIS had taken propaganda to a whole new level that never seen since Goebbels and Hitler. That's the way I look at this. It's amazing.
Who was the famous Nazi journalist, propaganda expert? I believe... I can't remember his name.
You mean Goebbels?
No. It was a journalist.
There was the movie Levi Wiesenthal, who did Triumph of Will, but she was a Hollywood person from German Hollywood. The guy who wrote The Sternum, what was his name?
I can't remember it. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yes. Peter, are we, and Gary, you too, I personally don't want a media blackout. I want a blackout, an embargo on weapons that are somehow getting, ISIS is not just using ransom money to buy, but they got their own oil revenue. And they've got tax dollars that they've stolen out of banks, our tax dollars, from the banks that were in Iraq. So they have their own revenue streams. Ransom just another part of their game, their revenue streams. What I'd rather have is a worldwide embargo, a quarantine, just like Kennedy did to Cuba, of anything getting into that area. Is that possible? Wouldn't that be better?
I think there should be a worldwide embargo of oil, and we should switch to electric vehicles tomorrow. That's what I think.
imagine if they couldn't get a hold of bullets for those guns. I just don't understand. But they've got money, and that's what people care about. Whether they got it through ransom through France, whether they got it from the gold of the bank of Mossal, whether they got it from the oil revenues, what do they extract it in taxes, like anybody like that, they've got the revenue streams. So there's going to be some arm merchant out there who's going to sell them an anti-missile or chemical weapons or whatnot, because it's just that's what it all comes down to is the money.
Well, that's the common theme that unites everything, including most of the discussions we've had today. At the end of the day, it comes down to money, and people will do almost anything that they can to get it, I'm afraid. From corrupt Wall Street businessmen to NFL owners and general managers to, just about anything else you'll talk about.
They use this beheading as a recruiting video to get more and more people to come join the forces. I mean, think about that. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, the videos are just, I've never seen anything like this since the Nazi propaganda machine. That's the only thing I can liken this to, with the social network of the quality of their videos, the quantity of them, what they're willing to show, and the fact of the matter is they're getting all these people to come over to the jihad, because there's so many, as Gail, you brought up the point, there's so many people who are desperate to make ends meet. When they can't make it here, they can't make it in England, they can't make it in anywhere else. Over there, someone's willing to pay their way over there and give them money to learn how, and they're going to do it. But they see nothing but despair in their own backyard or front yard, so why not try something new?
That is a great point. Not one I like, but It is a great
Americans
point.
Went. That's why the two friends from Minnesota went. If you listen to their parents talk and their teachers and whatnot, they were disillusioned. They were picked on. You know, all those things that Gary, you probably forget more than I know about. And they found someone who would accept them, just like we've seen that in the rise of gangs or this or that. And instead, this gang is a gang of radical Muslim killers. And that's what they felt at home, that they gave them camaraderie and friendship and food on their table, and they could be somebody. And to the point that they would pick up weapons and, you know, shoot, you know, and go to war for the ISIS.
Okay. Let's talk a little about ISIS. Apparently, Obama has cobbled together a coalition, but it seems to me that it's merely a marriage of convenience. No one seems to be keen to do much. If you watch the news, you know, all of the people with vested interests in getting rid of them are saying the same thing. We don't want boots on the ground. So how do you deal with these brats?
Oh. Go ahead, Peter.
There's no way to deal with them. There'll be covert ways of trying to get back at these people and hunt them down and, you know, bring them to justice, just like there was with, Osama bin Laden. And it will take a while. But there's very little else that can be done other than that. They'll try to hunt them down. They'll put together special military units, and they'll try to hunt them down. And a year from now, we'll read about how one of these guys was arrested and died in a gunfight. And you know that's the practical reality. It's not as horrific as it is. Nobody's going to go to war over the killing of a few people. They're just not. It's going to take a lot more than that. And that's the way these guys will be dealt with.
I think the president is in a you talk about being in an incredibly bizarre situation. This is it in foreign policy. It's like a coalition of the unwilling that he's trying to put together, because he's going to have to go into Syria, we don't want to aid Assad. There's 22 different rebel people there. Who do you arm? ISIS is trying to topple Assad. We don't like Assad, but we don't like ISIS. I mean, so that's a strange situation. I don't know how you do that. And then he's got all over Iraq, and we've already know what a mess that is. And then he's trying to get these are Muslims fighting Muslims. It isn't Hamas versus the IDF or the Hezbollah versus the IDF. It isn't the United States troops in there. It's not as clear cut as it was in the Gulf War, or unclear cut as it was in when we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, I think this guy, the president is in a very strange waters, I think uncharted waters that have been done before. And I'm glad he's treading cautiously, because I don't know how else you can do it, because he doesn't want to put boots on the ground. And I think some people are saying, and a lot smarter than I am, the only way you're going to beat, and Peter, I've heard a lot of people say your way, hey, we're going to have to do these incredible, great special ops, get these guys out, and that's it. Or you're going to have to do the boots on the ground thing, because ISIS learned a lesson over the last couple months. They extended the supply line, and our Air Force took them out one by one. And now they've retreated back to what they were doing best. Now, the only way you can beat them is with boots on the ground, if you decide to go that way. And I know the president is not going to do that. And I know no other country is going to step up and put troops there, unless it's Iraq and Syria. And so, but the coalition that he has trying to put together to fight who knows what, because, we've always said, you topple Assad, maybe the second regime's even worse, as we've seen what's happened with all this Arab Springs and whatnot. The first revolution, everyone was happy for. We got rid of a despot. And the second revolution, someone worse came in. I look at Libya. And so it's a real mess over there. And you know, what happens if, you know, my concern is what weaponry does ISIS have that we don't know about? We know they've captured tanks, anti-aircraft guns, personnel carriers, Humvees. Have they captured nuclear weapons? Have they captured chemical weapons? I don't know. I sure as hope that we don't find out.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. Yep.
And then we have to worry about the lone wolf attacks. I think that's another thing that the president has to worry about, too. How, you know, I mean, if he, you know, they're beheading these guys, they beheaded the British guy, are there ISIS cells, lone wolves, or terror cells because of the passports, because there have been so many Westerners going back and forth? Are we looking at 30 malls being blown up on Halloween night somewhere? I don't know. I think you have to worry about that, too. I mean, it's a real, real tough situation that I'm glad I'm not making those decisions, John.
And, Gary, do you have any words of wisdom on this one?
Well, I think it's really with the advent of the Internet. I think that it's become a real problem, and I think the religion of Islam has... it reminds me of the Christians in days of the Inquisition, and it really is an existential threat. I think, like I said before, that World War III is basically the developed countries against the extremists, the religious extremists, and I don't know how it ends. Like, I don't know if Pakistan gets better, if they get some illumination and some kind of Muslim Gandhi that comes in there. I don't know if Iran gets better and they get some kind of Muslim Gandhi in there. I don't know if Libya gets better. I don't know if they have to suffer such consequences for their violence that it just stops them. I don't know. I do think that I'm not wrong. I think that China and us will come together and we'll put armies out there. I think it will be a existential fight, basically for the existence of our planet. How we figure this of the rule of law, not the rule of religion, not the rule of extremism, not the rule of barbarism. But I think it's a very serious problem. I think it's like I said. Can any of you imagine on this panel that in our lifetimes that Pakistan has some kind of illumination, that Afghanistan has some kind of illumination, that Iran or Saudi Arabia or, you know, I don't even know, Jordan, the face of Jordan is a London-educated leader, but you don't know, Libya, Egypt, where is this going? How? What is the end game here? It's got to come from them if they're going to be part of the family of nations of civilized society. And when you can wreak havoc, like Sam just said, in movie theaters and in malls around the world, it becomes an existential position to our way of life and our freedoms and what we need and do and want for our world.
Oh, I'm in complete agreement.
Unfortunately, Gary, it seems like you're right. We're going backwards. We're not going forwards, and we're going back. And they're dragging everybody down with them. It's a real weight around the civilized world. It's a real anchor around everybody's, or albatross around everybody's neck right now. And it's a difficult situation because people are getting killed every second by the boatloads. And it scares me to where we're going. Someone has to do something. It's always, the Pope said something the other day. I thought it was an excellent line. He said, "We're fighting World War II all over again, but piecemeal." In the Middle East, there's the wars going on. In the East, you know, everywhere. The world's at war all over the place, but we don't call it World War III. Other people call them proxy wars or this or that, but he called it World War II in piecemeal, and I thought that was an excellent observation at this point, and that's what we're doing.
Talking about wars, I noticed that our good friend Vladimir Putin is just plowing on. the economic sanctions apparently have not crippled Russia yet, although I suspect they have. And that there's a new sanction apparently on the table, and that is removing Russia from the international monetary transfer system. It's called SWIFT. It's the Society for Worldwide Internet Financial Telecommunication. As I understand it, the last country to get removed from SWIFT was Iran. But it doesn't seem to have slowed them down much. Europe is not keen on taking this step. It would seriously cripple some banking issues. I'm curious, should we pull the plug on SWIFT? Peter?
I think we should do anything that we can to send a message to our beloved Russian counterparts, but I don't think it's going to happen for the reason you just described. It's at this point in time, whatever conflict or problem the Russian situation presents, it isn't enough to get people to sacrifice their economic well-being for it. It'll take something more catastrophic before we get to that level, just like we've been talking about all day long. It'll get there eventually. Something else is going to happen, and then the world community will come together. But until that time, people's pocketbooks will prevail.
Well, the pocketbooks in Russia are looking just a little grim right now. While Vlad the all-powerful is, getting great poll results, on his popularity, food prices are going up for a couple of reasons. Most notably, many countries are refusing to export to Russia, and Vlad, in his infinite wisdom, has sanctioned countries that they can no longer import meat. I see this as just a little bit of a deal breaker in the not too distant future. Sam, what do you think?
Well, I think we should, if he doesn't back, he keeps moving the goalposts back, until we. I think the international community has done what they can. They've tightened in the economic screws. But, again, I think, as Peter said, if they don't do it pretty soon, he's just going to push back. As Peter said, everyone's afraid to because of the, what's going to happen. Because you're also hurting yourself, too. We're hurting our exporters, as well as our importers. Instead of killing people, we're killing bank accounts. And that people don't like that. I don't think Vlad or his oligarchies are suffering at all. I think the little guy is suffering in Russia, and it's no different than the Tsar did it. The Tsars and their people, dukes and duchesses, the great, the peasants are always dead. I don't think there's going to be any November uprising in Petrograd. And the military's getting paid well, so I don't see it happening. We can't. And that's what I mean. It's that World War II piecemeal that's happening over there. Are you really willing to fire cruise missiles over into Russia to stop him from invading the Ukraine if he decides to do so? If he gets pissed off at these sanctions, let's say we up the sanctions, and he invades and he invades Ukraine, probably takes it over in a week. Okay, then what are we going to do?
Right.
What do you do then? What do you do then? I mean, so we turned off the money spigot. He says, oh, yeah? He cuts off the gas spigot. He cuts off the oil spigot, and he invades Ukraine, takes it over. Now what are we going to do?
Right.
Dr. Strangelove, fail. I mean, you know, I mean, what do you, I mean, when does it stop? I mean, I you know, Gary brought up a point about can you, you know, in our lifetime would these backward nations ever start to educate themselves and do what, you know, civilized, what we think civilized society should be about, and education and you know, and all that sort of stuff. Did you ever think that the Russians, you know, would did you ever think we'd be where we are, we'd be reliving the Cold War all over again after the fall of the Berlin Wall? I never thought so.
No,
we are. We're back in the Cold War.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
I just never thought that would ever happen again. I thought we were done with that. Communism was gone, and capitalism came in, democracy. He doesn't call himself the premier, he's the president. You know, the elections, and it's a rigged game all over again. Here we are. Back in, you know, it's 1955. Instead of Uncle Joe, we got Vlad the Putin.
Yeah. How about you, Peter? Any thoughts on, you know, should we, or should everyone get behind the idea of switching off SWIFT for Russia?
Yeah, I think so. I personally think so. I don't like one bit the way they're thumbing their nose at the world community. But I just, even though I personally think that that's what we should do, I don't think the world is ready for that yet. I think it's going to take a little bit more of them, you know, pushing everybody's buttons and pushing their boundaries farther and farther, and then the world will galvanize and there'll be more swift action against them. But until then, it's still in the realm of debate and rhetoric and talking about doing something to them rather than actually doing it.
And Gary, economic sanctions, this probably is the biggest one that could be levied against Russia. Is it worth it?
I don't know. I just, you know, I'm proudly an American who is ashamed of my country this century, and I just don't understand how anyone could be outraged. I mean, I guess you can if you are outraged at our invasion of Iraq, but I just don't know how you could be outraged at what Russia is doing. If this is what, yeah, okay, do the sanctions, and if that's the chess pieces you want to move. But I'm not interested. I don't go wake up in the morning thinking about Ukraine. I don't go to sleep at night worrying about Ukraine. If Russia wants to go there and do that, okay. If it starts to become like a cancer and they're spreading throughout Europe, I think there will be an appropriate response. But I just don't know enough about it, and I think that we are in no position to point fingers. I think it's outrageous that McCain and Lindsey Graham, two drunk guys at a bar that just want to fight all the time, why they're so outraged. These guys are just 5'3" tall, and they want to fight the biggest guy at the bar all the time. and it's just like, what are you doing? It's like, what are you doing? Like, go to anger management classes, you chicken hawks. I mean, obviously McCain isn't a chicken hawk, but Lindsey Graham, for God's sakes, dude. It's just disgusting to see him. It's just absolutely disgusting.
Okay.
Sorry, that's how I feel.
Well said.
I've got two last questions that I want to bounce around. Did any of you notice that CNN has a new contributor? It's none other than ex-press secretary Jay Carney. And he went head-to-head with John McCain. It was quite the shouting match. Did any of you see it?
I did
not see it,
but I'm not surprised. You know, I'm not. Who doesn't, from what political party, who doesn't try to go into the private sector and capitalize on their connections and whatnot? And I believe Jay Carney's wife goes by a different name, and she's involved with news media on another station. So, hey, why not? You know, so doesn't bother me one bit. Doesn't surprise me one bit that there are people in government capitalize on their government roles in the private sector. Let's face it, Simon, Monsanto's the king of it when it comes to raiding the government ranks to put some of their people there and to put them back into their lobbying efforts on their stuff. So, big deal. I'm sure he'll be entertaining. He was one of the more activist. He's probably the new breed of press secretaries, as far as I'm concerned, being more of an activist than an apologist. And I think that he probably will be remembered most for that, as a press secretary.
Right. Okay, I'm looking at the clock, and we're flat out of time. So I just want to go round the table once and get everyone's parting thoughts. Or, you know, parting arrows, as it may be. I'll start with you, Peter.
Well, we had a nice discussion of the world's problems today, and I don't know if we solved any, but I do have this fear that the great crisis is still coming, and I don't know what it's going to be or how it's going to manifest itself, but. We all seem to be as a world going in a crazy direction, and I don't know what the next great catastrophe is going to be, and God help us all when it comes, but I'm bracing for it, and look forward to talking about it until then.
Okay. And, Gary?
I unfortunately agree with Peter. I think I'm not unfortunate to agree with Peter, but I'm, you know what I mean. But I think it's a sorry state of affairs, and I'm just very pessimistic on our country and our ability to be a leader anymore. And I said 1,000 times, I just hate the Republican Party right now. They need to be destroyed, and we have to figure out something else. And the Democrats have to get their act together, but it feels hopeless. You know, it just feels it's like you're arguing with someone in a relationship who doesn't have any insight, and they just can't figure things out, and you just get frustrated. So it feels very, very, very sad to me.
And Sam?
Well, obviously you guys are stocking up on canned goods and water, so you'll be prepared for the apocalypse when it's coming. I'm a little bit more optimistic. The Browns won today. Everyone said they were going to not win a game this year. Well, we've proven that wrong. I think, as history repeats itself over and over and over again. Now, if we don't do something, if we don't recognize that, and good, we have no one to blame but ourselves. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's our problem. Maybe it is easier to put your head in the sand around the world while things are going on. But I do think, Gary, Peter, you both brought up some good points today. And so did you, Simon. The Muslim world is going to have to come up and say, ISIS is not what we preach. If you're a religion of peace, and Muhammad was this prophet that wanted peace and love, then their Gandhi, as you said, Gary, better rise up and start leading and join a coalition of the civilized world to stamp these people out and get rid of everything. And I think that's going to happen. I think it's just going to take time to form because it's never happened before. It has, but it happened centuries ago. And it used to be led by a guy by the name of the Pope. and there's been all these religious wars, and so we've gone through this. It just hasn't happened in a long time, and because the war was always about tyranny, it was like the Nazis, it was, you know, all of that. This war is going to be a different war and an ideology, and it hasn't been fought in centuries, and that's what's taken so long to do it. And ultimately, if the United States gets drawn into this, we have the best military in the world. The best. That's why Russia, and with the help of everybody else, we put an end to this. But how we get there, that's a tough question. I'm glad I'm not making that decision.
Okay. This is Simon Barrett. I want to thank you all for taking part. I hope you have a happy, safe, and healthy week. And we'll be back again next weekend, next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.